Hi friends, welcome to the Helping Friendly Podcast. We are going to review, I'm already starting this off with a flub. We're going to review The Last Night from SPAC 7/3/16. And Chilwig is here, Craig Hilwig's here with us. He wrote the Fish.net review, and it was a fun read. Craig, tell us a little bit more about just the Saratoga Springs area and, you know, the venue. And we know that you've been up there a lot.
Well, you know, as I said in the review, upstate New York, it can be a really beautiful place in the summer. They have these, you know, really big skies with big puffy clouds. And if the weather's just right, it's, you know, ample sunshine, cool breezes, and just a pleasant experience out there. And the venue itself is in the middle of a park, so there's lots of tall trees, and you're literally parking among the pines. There's lots of shaded areas. It's nice. A great tailgating experience, and it's become kind of a tradition, a 3.0 mostly tradition, but a lot of people really enjoy going up there for the whole experience.
Yeah, you know, I've never really heard anything bad about the venue or the area or anything like that. Just maybe they bottleneck people in, so maybe a little crowded, but otherwise it's a wonderful place, right?
That and you know, it's an old place. I think that it's celebrating its 50th year this year. So okay. I mean, the facilities are a little bit worn down, and you know, it's showing its age a little bit, but you know, hopefully they can I think they're supposed to be renovating it, and they started with the lawn improvements and things like that, and
cool.
Hopefully it'll continue to become a place where we can go and spend a weekend and see fish.
Nice RJ, you read Craig's fish.net review, right?
Yeah, I was waiting for the title, because Craig is great at the puns. it didn't disappoint.
No.
So Craig, is this, well, sorry. So the title of the piece was Spec Letdown Party. They of course opened the second set with Soul Shakedown Party. So that was good. What do you make of the, you know, there's obviously a lot of chatter about, you know, the show was not good. The show was not good at times, or the show was bad overall. What do you make of the, given your perspective of seeing the band for a long time and kind of, you know, having your perspective on it, what do you make of this? Is this just like a stumble in the road, or is it a sign of something else? I mean, what did you walk out thinking last night?
I mean, I don't know what to think about last night. I had a lot of high hopes after the first night of SPAC, because I thought that was certainly a tier above anything they had played previously in the tour. And if that was, you know, if that was going to be the upward curve of this run, then we were in for, you know, a lot of good jams and a lot of good shows as the band continues to gain its confidence and its prowess as a tour goes. And that's kind of the typical arc of a tour that we've seen. Mm-hmm. You know, even, you know, tour to tour, it can differ, but, you know, we tend to sort of have the experience now where we know that the first 5 to 6 shows of the tour can be a little bit clunky, and you know, they work the rust out, and then, you know, a combination of set list fatigue and just repetition combined to start getting some more really deep jams and some more deeper cuts and bust outs as the tour progresses. And I thought that a lot of people were hoping that by the time we got through the end of SPAC that we would be realizing that phase of the tour, but I don't think we are. And too soon to say whether or not it's just slow going and it's going to pick up, or whether or not it's just going to be the tone of this tour.
You know, I've read a few times that people are like, well, we didn't get Trey with months of Fairly Well practice. Do you think it's, I mean, there were a ton, like we mentioned earlier, there's a ton of flubs last night, especially in the first set. Do you think, Craig, that it's a lack of practice on Trey's part?
I have no way of knowing that. I mean, You know, my sort of just speculation was that, you know, they're working on an album, so they're playing a lot together, mm-hmm. and they're listening to each other, and they're mm-hmm. and that through that process there would be, you know, some cohesion coming into the process. And I know that they had set up things in St. Paul for a few days before the tour even started to,
yeah,
you know, sound check, rehearse in a live format, test out the new LED screens and whatnot. So it sounded like they're taking a really serious approach to, you know, making this tour tremendous. And I'm not sure what's going on. And I don't know if it's clear from the couch tours, you know, if people watching at home are seeing things that I'm not seeing, you know, from 30 rows back or whatever.
Yeah. Right.
I
thought last night, I watched last night as the first one I've watched, but it was, to me, it just looked like Trey was like having a blast, you know. That was kind of one of my mm-hmm. takeaways. He's just like, he's jumping around and having fun and smiling and all that. And that was kind of an interesting contrast, I guess, to what most of the fans were feeling a lot of the time. I felt really bad for Mike during Sugar Shack because I was like, hey, come on, man, like, just don't even bother, you know, if you can't do it. But
it's not like that's the first time he's ever blown that song, but yeah. they're not giving it up, you know what I mean, like full steam ahead.
And he wants to give Mike his songs, which is cool.
Yeah,
I'm sure
yeah.
it comes from a place of good intentions, but
right.
I guess, Craig, the main thing from my perspective is, I think we've talked about this before, is that people want an unpredictable band to do predictable things according to their own whims and preferences, you know, and that's just not how real life works. It was interesting that you kind of compared, you know, you used the marriage metaphor. I'm sure that was kind of tongue in cheek, but I actually think it makes a lot of sense in ways in kind of like life is, you know, you don't know you can't predict, you can plan all you want, but you don't know what's going to happen. And these are four human beings kind of in a complex relationship musically and personally. And it's just, you can't just go in and say like, they better be epic or that's going to suck, you know?
Right.
So I don't know. What do you think about that, Craig?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously the marriage metaphor wasn't accidental, and you know, any marriage or marriage type relationship is a lot of work, and there's going to be disappointments, and there's going to be some days when one or both of you aren't feeling it, and it makes it harder.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so there's definitely that, but you know, I think when you see how awesome that moment dance jam was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was stunning. It was as good a top level jamming as anything we saw in any of the peak jams in summer 2015,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think. And it was so enjoyable and so it's seemingly effortless on their part and fluid. And then to just have it be like, okay, and here's a bunch of songs to fill out the next 45 yeah. or 50 minutes.
Right.
Why? Obviously, I mean, they seem to be able to turn it on. So,
yeah, and, I mean, and there seems to be that, like,
the capabilities there.
The pullback, even, that I've noticed from Trey when it seems like Mike and Fish are really grooving. You know what I mean? That he's like purposely kind of pulling it back. Maybe not, but it just seems that's what it seems to my ears.
It's so hard to, you know,
yeah.
impute intention to things, and I try to avoid that. But you know, from my perspective, you know, when they went into Twist, I thought, "Whoa, here we go!" You know,
mm-hmm.
the first Twist of the tour was the first set Twist, and it was a pretty, you know, straightforward 7-8 minute, you know, fiery, you know, Santana-esque Twist that didn't really go anywhere, but that was okay because it was a first set Twist. It was four or five songs into the first set. And here you have, you know, the Twist in, what was this, the three slot or the, you know.
Yeah.
And in a place where, you know, you could use another, you know, 13, 14,
yeah.
17, 20 minutes to stretch it out. And it was a really good Twist. It was peppy. It was crisp. It had a lot of fiery leads. It wasn't flubby at all to my ears, although, you know, the sound was, you know, not terrific in the pavilion this year in my experience. But
oh, really? Why do you think? Any idea?
I don't know. Maybe it was my seats. Maybe it was, you know, the rig this year. But
yeah,
it varies, and I've heard it be better there. But
well, you know, I don't mean to interrupt, but it's funny because people are also talking that, like, Trey, there's chatter or whatever, that Trey is frustrated with his equipment. I haven't noticed that, but I know it's new. You know, there was all that talk about the switches that they've changed in the, you know, the middle pickup. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean,
the equipment I'm more frustrated with are his finger coordination. I mean, it's not consistently at a level where it's adding to the music.
Right. Yeah, it's go ahead, RJ.
I was just going to say, we'll let you go in a minute, Craig, but this last question, I kind of, for both of you guys, is Phish kind of in a no-win situation here because they've been so good for so long, and it's clear, like you said, that they can turn it on and they can kind of get locked into this. You know, we're almost too used to, like, epic second sets coming every, you know, 5 or 10 shows, if not more often, so, like, are they in an unwinnable position here by, like, you know, continuing to kick ass, therefore raising our expectations and then ultimately leaving a bunch of fans pissed off every few shows? Is that, like, I don't know. That's just kind of what I've been thinking the past couple of days.
Well, you know, it's certainly, I mean, I'm sure it's crossed everybody's mind that, I mean, you know, look, if you think about it, like, how smart are Mick Jagger and Keith Richards to write these songs with the, you know, the 4-bar blues, 3 chords, and you can play those songs until you're 85.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you know, instead Trey wrote songs like Yam and Divided Sky and It's Ice and Sugar Shack. And, you know, those songs are hard to play without constant repetition, especially as you get older. So I think they are in an unwinnable position in many respects because people are going to expect a lot of setlist variation, deep cuts, including the old complex pieces like that. And,
yeah,
you know, unless they're playing them, you know, in a heavy rotation, it's inevitable that you're going to see some rough patches.
Yeah, I think it's unwinnable in two ways. Number one, like you said, Craig, their catalog is so big and it's complex that it's hard to play the whole catalog, which everybody wants, and be on top of it all. And secondly, it's unwinnable because, you know, I was thinking when that MoMA dance, after the MoMA dance, and then after the end of the second set yesterday, that it's sort of like Tube, you know, like jam Tube out. And I've always said jam MoMA out more, you know what I mean? It's so funky. And then we get it in the second set, an awesome MoMA, and people are still bitching. You know what I mean? So it's to me, that's unwinnable. Like, they could have played an awesome 15-minute Tube last night, and people would still be bitching about the Show of Life and, you know, Let Me Lie. So.
Yeah.
Well, you know, then I guess that's something that we all need to kind of, everybody needs to reassess for his or herself, that in a world where your average Phish concert is a bunch of songs, you know, more than a handful of flubby moments, and one superlative anchor jam in the second set. And is that enough to hold it together for everybody?
Yeah. It comes down to your own preference. And, like, when I'm there, it is, you know, but
right.
It's different. The couch tour thing has complicated it quite a bit, I think. But, well, Craig, we don't want to take too much of your time. I know you're with your family. We appreciate you joining us, and I think leaving it with that question of, you know, is it good enough for you being able to see the best live band in America, and some one amazing jam or more per night? I think that's a pretty good good setup. But we'll leave people to think about that.
And for the record, Jonathan says it is. He's telling us all to mellow out.
Yeah,
right?
Jonathan wanted to send that message along. He wants everyone to mellow out. That was his message. So Craig, take that advice from Jonathan too.
Yeah, you're so uptight, Craig.
Stay mellow.
Yeah.
We appreciate you taking the time, Craig.
Thanks for having me again. And you know, look, as I said, I closed my review off with, you know, for me, the better still outweighs the worse. And,
yes.
And it's, for me, it's the whole, it is the whole experience. And, you know, even with the shows that aren't so great, if you can still like say, but at least I still had fun, then you're winning. And then we're all winning. And the central purpose of doing it is, for me at least, is fulfilled. So, you know, there's always going to be more shows, and, you know, you got to catch them all. They're like Pokemon if you want to catch those glimmers.
So everyone's got to go on tour. I did find myself this morning Googling how long it would take to drive to Portland and Hartford from where I am now. So,
nice.
But I probably shouldn't do that. But
well, you can probably get tickets now.
Yeah, exactly. But that's a good point, Craig. And thanks again for sharing with us.
Appreciate it.
All right. Have a great July 4th, guys.
Thanks. You too.
You too.
So I think, you know, RJ, the only highlight that everyone can agree on is the MoMA Jam. So we'll leave everybody with that one.
Got to do it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Talk to everyone post Portland in a couple days.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks, Brad.
Bye, man.
Later.
jumping and the cotton.